You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm very pleased to have on today a familiar face to those on the Illinois side of the river. He's State Representative Greg Johnson. He's serving his first term in the 72nd District. Running for re-election. Greg, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today.
Always an honor to be here with you, Robin. Thank you for everything.
Well, thank you. I like to ask everybody why they're running. And I know you've only been there one term, but what made you decide to seek to re-up for another term this time?
I'm running again. There's just more work to do. You know, as someone who was a latecomer to politics and to serving, I didn't know if I was going to, the first term, if I was going to seek a second term or not initially. Made the decision several months ago that just have more work to do. I have some legislation that's kind of still sitting out there. And, the learning curve is pretty quick. You, from one year to the next, I look even from my first year to my second year, it's amazing. They use the term drinking from a fire hose. How you, I like to use a sports analogy. It's kind of slowing the game down a little bit. You know, when you first start, everything is coming at you so crazy. I felt like the dumbest guy in Springfield. I felt like I wasn't understanding anything. And then the second year came around and the process started to slow down. So it allows me to maybe mentor others as they come in.
Well, I can share with our listeners one thing I noticed. I've been to Springfield probably a half a dozen times over the last couple of years with my class or for other purposes. Every time I see Greg Johnson, he's in a hurry. going from one meeting to the other. So you're obviously got a lot going on, a lot of important things for the district and the region. Let me say, I'm just curious too. What do you consider your top accomplishments? I mean, yeah, you start out, as everybody knows, you start out in any job at the bottom in seniority. You got to work your way up. What do you feel like were your biggest accomplishments that you would want voters to know as you head into this reelection?
I think my top accomplishments the last 2 years have really been looking for economic development and ways to access federal dollars. Last year, I was able to get our first building codes requirement bill in the state of Illinois, I think that we've ever had, if not the last 30, 40 years. And it was in response to what happened in Edwardsville with the Amazon plant a few years ago. We had a tornado go through Edwardsville and we had some people killed in that building. And because we're now have structural design standards, it now allows us to access more federal dollars when it comes to building things here in Illinois. So much so that the main proponent of the bill told me she had actually went up and spoke up in Minnesota as well on that piece of legislation that we were able to get passed. This year, we had a River's Edge tax zone bill. We were able to add the Quad Cities. Initially, it was Rock Island. We got them to add Moline and East Moline as well into a River's Edge development zone, which allows us to renovate properties along the riverfront. So we're not only investing in new structures along the riverfront and accessing federal dollars, but doing the same with existing structures. You know, I've always, even when I ran back in 2018, I had a real focus on economic development along the river because I really viewed us, and as you remember, as somewhat of a Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh was a city that was really known for simply the steel industry. But when you look at what they've done along the Allegheny, they've redefined themselves as an IT hub, a medical hub. I think we are still trying to redefine ourselves here in the district. But I think that I still believe that the Mississippi River is really key in that development and getting things forward. I'm part of a new Mississippi River caucus that we newly formed at the end of May. And I've had our first meeting in June in Minnesota, and I got a great chance to see how they're using policies on the old Ford plant up there. And it's absolutely, I would encourage anybody to go see, if you want to see positive economic development, go up to Minneapolis, St. Paul, check out this old Ford plant site where they've got luxury and affordable housing as well. Thousands of units there as well, which addresses that, because I do think there are people that want to move in here into the region, but we really have a real lack of affordable housing. And that needs to be a real focus here into the future as we go into future legislative sessions, how we're going to incentivize building those. I really believe if we build these affordable housing, those people will come here.
It's a good time to be chasing federal dollars. I've had guests on here over the past 3 or 4 months talking about these bills that have been passed at the federal level. The infrastructure bill, number one, which I know you're very familiar with, the CHIPS bill, which is trying to create a domestic chip manufacturing capability, and then the Inflation Reduction Act, which has a lot of help for alternate energy, things like that. Have you narrowed in on some of those? I know you have the infrastructure bill, obviously, but any other thoughts on how to access some of those dollars for the Quad City?
Interesting. We just had that conversation yesterday with the River Caucus. I want to see what they're doing in other states. I think when I prepare for my next legislative session, I'm always looking at what they're doing in other states. We'd like to mimic what's working and what's not. And because we have about 12 states in this caucus, we're all going to learn from each other. And I asked the organizers of the Basin Caucus yesterday, I said, are you going to be able to make sure you have a bucket for us to look at what's going on in other states where they're accessing these federal dollars and how we can mimic some of that here as well? So I'm going to be working very, very closely with the NCSL, the environmental wing of the NCSL, to make sure that we get every single opportunity we have. You know, I think one thing that one of the frustrations I have is we have a lot of incentives and grant available here in Illinois, but I think it's remarkably difficult for people to navigate their way through that. So we have essentially pots of money out there that are never accessed because sometimes it's very difficult to navigate through that. And I always tell my cities, the ones that are going to be successful are those of you that have a grant writer. Those of you that are going to struggle are the ones that don't. Grant writers are an investment well worth that investment. What I've noticed with federal dollars is I think it's a little bit easier to access those dollars if you have the right partners in place and everybody understands what they have to do. So for me, this is the next part of my learning curve as a legislator, is how to get everybody educated. My office itself, my district director is wonderful at helping people navigate through the grant process. She herself is now a grant writer as well. I want to make sure that every single dollar I can get, both federal and state, to the 72nd district comes here. That's really the way we build our way out of this.
To talk about some of the economic trends. I mean, I think it seems like overall the economy is going well. We've got inflationary pressures, which we might talk about a little later. But the things I see are a couple storm clouds on the horizon. One is the continued population loss in Rock Island County, which started back in the 70s and 80s. It's continuing, but also the recent layoffs that Deere's announced and WIU has ongoing issues. First of all, what are you doing, I guess, to help some of the folks that are facing economic dislocation? But that larger issue of population loss, is that kind of maybe the center of some of your efforts to try to, you know, get jobs, but get some growth back in the Rock Island County area?
It is a part of it. Getting people, I do hear from a lot of people that live on the other side. You know, I don't want to throw the state of Iowa under the bus. But I think it's important, you know, I believe that there's a lot of policies that are being passed in the state of Iowa that are anti-labor, even anti-education. And I talk to teachers every day that would like to come over here that you know, live in Iowa. I just think the housing crisis, the housing shortage is a real barrier for us. Like I said, Robin, I don't want to, obviously, I had a workers' rights bill, a workplace readiness bill that addresses various programs for our kids when they come out of high school through the apprenticeship programs where the school sets aside a week, brings the trades in. But just as important in that part is a workplace education where our kids understand how not to be misclassified as an independent contractor, being forced to clock out on the job when there's not a customer there, which as we know is wage theft, managers and owners stealing their tips. And a lot of our kids, when they're in our schools, our juniors, seniors, have no idea when they're being taken advantage of as workers. And I think that Illinois is doing so many great things. And even when it comes to, you know, the issue with women's rights as well, of course, women's reproductive rights, I think Illinois is a much more welcoming state. But right now in Rock Island County, we don't have the room to take everybody in. We have to fix that.
Interesting. I'm glad you mentioned apprenticeships, because I remember talking to you 2 years ago. You're very passionate about apprenticeships, and it's an ongoing focus of mine too, because it doesn't seem like we talk about apprenticeships a lot, but there doesn't seem to be a lot going on. You mentioned something you did. Can you expand on that a little bit, please?
So I had a workplace readiness bill that was signed into law in July. And what it does is it allows, I don't believe in mandates for our schools. I think I'm on the elementary and secondary education. I do think that we mandate a whole heck of a lot more than we should. And I just don't think there's enough time in the day for our schools to function with every single mandate. But it is asking our schools to set aside a week, a workplace readiness week, where they work with our trades, and I have met with our building trades and with our Federation of Labor, for them to go in there and even provide the resources and the material to go into assemblies or go into classrooms and tell the kids, whether it's the carpenters, the plumbers, the electricians, you know, just the life that they've been able to build through that program. And open up these avenues for these kids. You know, obviously we want, it's a little different environment when I came out of high school where you could for a year or two kind of meander through and decide what you want to do. Our kids now really have to join the workforce immediately. So as I've said all along, we want them prepared for any track they want to take. Ideally, they'd be prepared for two track. They could go for the higher education, or they could go straight into the workforce through our apprenticeship programs. I think giving our kids the tools to take various paths upon graduation has to be the way to go in the future, because they're competing in a global economy.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Illinois State Representative Greg Johnson from the 72nd District. He's got a great name, if you didn't know that before. But he's serving his first term in the legislature and has talked about the learning curve and talked about some key issues here. Greg is a bread and butter economic issues type representative, and kind of lessons learned along the way. We focused a little bit on issues here on jobs and apprenticeships and growth in the Quad Cities and housing. He's identified as a key concern. I want to shift gears a little bit to education. And you talked a little bit about that, and I know that was a focus of yours when you first ran. Do you feel comfortable that Illinois schools, the funding levels are adequate, and that we're doing enough in our schools to meet the challenges of this global economy?
I definitely think when it comes to elementary, K through 12, and now even with the Smart Start program, I think the investments we're doing in our children up through high school is really the way to go. We can keep adding an additional $350 million through the evidence-based funding. And I've got a couple of districts now that have tiered up. They've tiered to the next district. So we are certainly doing better. Do we have a ways to go? Of course we do. That's going to be a long-term plan. You don't unfund and become the poorest funded state over 40 years of neglect and then fix that within 7, 8, 9 years. It's going to take a few more years. On the higher education side, I'm disappointed. I don't think we've done enough. And we are now starting to talk about a similar model within our higher education. We've seen the layoffs at Western that have taken place. You know, between Western and John Deere, the layoffs there, it has been a pretty dismal last month around here. Now, our job fairs have been well attended. We have been able to find a lot of places for our displaced workers to go. But I think that in continuing to invest in those opportunities in higher education, we just have to do better. We're just not doing enough. And Western's only one example of where we're failing there. We just, the same commitment that was made on our kids at the younger years. You know, we are doing well. You know, we have, you know, I'm not saying it's all bad, Robin. We've now funded MAP grants for 4 years running. Every student now has got a MAP grant. You know, when we look at what happened for those 3 years and we failed to fund the MAP grants, the brain drain was pretty profound. And we're still obviously still dealing with the repercussions from that as well. But we're doing much better. I do think we may need to take a little more of a look even at the MAP grant system now to make sure that our community colleges are getting their fair share of that as well, that our students in our community colleges not being left behind as well, because they are serving a much bigger role than they did even when I was younger in higher education.
Teachers faring. I know you knock a lot of doors in your campaign 2 years ago, and I know you're doing it again. But I think one concern I keep hearing is teachers, and especially the mental health aspect of teachers and students. And I know this issue has been a passion of yours as well. Can you discuss that a little bit, especially how teachers are doing, but also the mental health efforts you've undertaken as a representative?
Yeah, mental health. You know, it's funny, Robin. We've talked about infrastructure. We've talked about education. We've talked about mental health. These are the three pillars, the things that, you know, and they all kind of run into each other here, right? The world's even thought, so my granddaughter has wanted to be a teacher for the last few years. And just last night, I gave her the contact to the Carpenters Hall, because now she's talking about the apprenticeship program to the Carpenters. So, I mean, she has seen the stressors. I see teachers are, these are legacy positions. And I hear more and more teachers discouraging their own kids from going into this profession. And a lot of this has to do coming out of the pandemic, but the mental health issues. These are high stress jobs. They at times they feel unappreciated. And I just, you know, when you're trying to deal with the issues of your own, dealing with your own family at home and then having to go to school, I cannot imagine the pressures that are put on teachers. I just really can't. The mental health crisis is not going away. We're trying, but we're not doing enough. You know, I did have a House Bill 5510, which passed out of the House, which I'm very excited about. It was a collaborative effort with the social workers and also with our school counselors, who for years, the counselors were opposed to the social workers coming in and helping with the mental health crisis in our schools. But we got an agreement. Everybody agreed now is the time. And we're hoping that the Senate side and the State Board of Education will allow us to create this new license stipulation that brings them in. Because currently what we have, Robin, is we have some districts that can afford it are privatizing these services out to actually less qualified individuals going into the schools with just bachelor's degrees. I'm talking about social workers with master's degrees going into our schools, supporting our school counselors that are already in network, and working with the kids that don't have the IEPs or the more serious concerns, but those that have everyday concerns. Our kids are growing up in a world now that is just on fire, it seems like. I'm hoping that fire breaks a little bit in November, but our kids are dealing with, you know, I apologize to my daughter and her friends a lot. Sometimes I feel like we have so failed their generation, and mental health is just another area where we just got to do more. We just do.
I want to kind of switch a little bit into healthcare generally. I know that was another big issue for you. And I can personalize this a little as somebody who's just been taking care of his mother. A lot of us people, you and I age, are kind of taking care of kids and also parents. Has state government, and this may be more of a federal concern, I don't know if it's state government's involved or not, but do you hear a lot about that? And is state government doing, is there a role there for them to play?
Yeah, I think right now, the big thing, focus right now, is the Prescription Drug Affordability Board. You know, we should not have seniors, or anybody for that matter, having to pick between their groceries or a meal or their prescription drugs. You know, my wife has a, you know, we have anti-seizure medicine. We first met many, many years ago. She had seizures, and I found out she was basically taking her pills in thirds because she just couldn't afford it. And I'm like, we have to fix this. So That is one thing. We have to make sure we also we have to eliminate these ghost networks. If health insurance is junk insurance, it's not doing anything but taking people's premiums and not providing coverage for individuals. We need to hold those bad actors accountable. We just cannot allow them to function here in Illinois or anywhere else for that matter. But holding the bad actors to account, making sure that our prescription drugs are affordable, all of these things go a long ways. Because if you don't have your health, what do you have? You know, you just have to.
I want to get back. I mentioned you knock a lot of doors, and I know you do that. What are people saying at the doors? I know you give them an opportunity, you know, to talk, and you're, as a elected official, you're a good listener. What are the things on most people's minds in your district this summer as you seek re-election?
It's been the weirdest environment, you know. Really, it's about, I have a lot of conversations with parents who, during the MAP grant desert, lost their kids to opportunities elsewhere. And then if they went to school elsewhere, they built their lives elsewhere. Or it was about property taxes. It's a much more politically charged environment we're in right now. It just feels like you're knocking doors and the first question they're asking, are you Republican or Democrat? And it never used to be that way. Yeah. The temperature is so high right now. And I'm not going to lie, the introduction of Kamala Harris put this new energy out there into the electorate as well. You know, knocking doors, as you know, is 90% listening and just 10% introducing yourself. And people are very worried about the polarizing nature of our politics. Really, I think that's front and center because their kids see it. Yeah. Their kids experience it. They see obscene signs on the way to school that are put in people's yards. And I think it's okay to support your candidate of choice, but to demean candidates, whether it's an anti-Trump sign or an anti-Harris sign, I understand it's constitutionally protected, but I think we have to, as adults, understand that our kids are watching, our kids are listening, and they are so much more perceptive than we give them credit for. So it is. People want to be back to being neighbors a little bit. They want to go back to not going to a barbecue. Being a state representative and having a district office, someone comes into my office, I don't ask them if Republican or Democrat. We have someone that comes in that needs help. The question is never asked. And I think people just want to go back to their life where they're not looking at someone thinking, I wonder if that's a Harris supporter. I wonder if that's a Trump supporter. We just should always assume that someone is coming with good intentions. And here in the Midwest in particular, I think people are just special. We don't generally have that. And I think in a way, sometimes people feel like we're losing our way there. Sorry for the long-winded answer, but that really is the climate that's out there. It's a little disheartening, but I believe I always, the eternal optimist, we will get to the other place. We will get to a better place. And we'll get back to who we truly are, which is people looking out for each other.
I'm glad you did speak at length, because I'm hearing that from a lot of people. People were wanting to get back to a more, quote, normal politics. When I remember the time, I'm old enough, when this wasn't, I mean, you didn't automatically look at everybody and label them Republican or Democrat. And we've got to be able to do that in our society. So I'm glad you did bring it up.
Thank you.
We got about 2 or 3 minutes left here, Greg. What I like to do with candidates also, I like to start with the question, why are you running? I like to end with, like, in a court case, your closing argument, your summation. You've got opposition here. Take a couple minutes and talk to the voters in your district and why you should be reelected.
I think I should be reelected because I have always, you know, I think there's two kinds of people that wake up in the morning. There's, what am I going to do to make my world better today? Or what am I going to do to make the world better today? And, I think for me, and I've admitted many times, I don't think I really found any purpose in my life until the labor movement. And after my father had died when I was about 38 years old, ever since that day, I've been really committed to just building a better world for everybody. And I go into rooms and I ask people who hates politics, and everybody raises their hands, including me. I don't. The worst part of this job is I have to go to Springfield. I love being home with my family. But until I see a better way for me to do the work that I think I have to do, Springfield is where I have to do that work. I just do. I haven't given up on myself. I am living my best life ever up to this point, but I want my daughter and her friends and those generations in between to have the best life possible. And they're on my mind every single day when I go to Springfield is how can I make their worlds better?
How could the next generation rise up and build on, you know, the successes we've had, but do better than our failures?
And they will. They will. They, you know, they we're going to give them the tools that they need to correct the mistakes that we've made and to build upon our successes. And that's really what this job is about, continuing to build a better world.
I think so, too. I think this younger generation, I'm heartened, you know, as listeners know, I teach part time. I'm anxious to see what they can do. I'm really anxious for them to hold office and build a better world and, you know, again, clean up some of our mistakes, which we've talked about here today.
I know you're not, that's your school is not in my district, but I was jealous last year when you met with Senator Halpin, because I'm like, I want to be up there and meet with the kids too, because I love it when the groups come down and you talk to them and you listen to them. So next time you come down, I step out of district, I'd love to be a part of it.
Okay, that's a bet. We'll do that. State Representative Greg Johnson has been our guest today on Heartland Politics. He's a Democrat representing the 72nd District in Illinois, in Rock Island County. Greg, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks for everything you guys do, okay?
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.